SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
And happy Friday. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. I'm Craig Mish along with Davis Maddock. We're along for the ride with you watching here on SportsGrid.com for the next hour. Talking a lot of fantasy football as we get ready for the upcoming weekend. We'll also recap, of course, Thursday night. We'll set a DFS lineup for you as well. And Davis, last night, certainly compelling game going in as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, at least early on, imposed their defensive will on the Baltimore Ravens. But in the end, Lamar Jackson came through big for them, clearly. And it kind of felt like a kill shot to the Bucs. My gosh, they just look desolate, not interested, really, in the fourth quarter, I guess, a little bit interested in coming back. But I now have to be really worried about them moving forward.
Well, how about this one? The winner of Falcons-Panthers on Sunday is going to move into sole possession of first place in the NFC South. I think, honestly, any of the four teams in the NFC South right now could convince themselves that they are a good three-game run away from running away with that division, especially with, up this very smartly, the NFL stacking all those divisional games at the end of the season. The Buccaneers are, they just seem terrible, right? I mean, it just seems like the offensive line is not doing their job. Leonard Fournette, I mean, I know he scored the rushing touchdown, but he just looks... Fournette looks like Jaguars Fournette, just, pretty much, unless he gets past that first level and breaks a tackle, it's pretty much 2 yards and a cloud of dust. I guess Evans and Godwin look pretty good. I mean, Brady misses Evans for the wide open touchdown in the first quarter, overthrows it out of the back of the end zone. Evans not quite able to get his feet in. And, Rashad Bateman really was not able to play that much last night, played the fourth most snaps amongst the wide receivers with that foot injury. Mark Andrews leaves in the second quarter with a shoulder injury. Isaiah Likely, 6 receptions, 77 yards, and a touchdown. It's so annoying. I mean, every time Lamar has a bad game, and make no mistake, he did cost them the Giants game, everyone's like, the Ravens were smart not to give him the contract. He stinks. Bury the Ravens. Fire Greg Roman. They're all bad. And then a come-from-behind victory in a primetime game. No one will learn anything. The next time the Ravens lose a game they're supposed to win, we'll all do the same thing. It is one of the most frustrating things to me in football.
All right, let's get to our headlines here on this Friday. As we mentioned, the Buccaneers are now 3-5 and are in really the biggest slump of Tom Brady's career, let's be honest. Just doesn't look good for him moving forward. We will see. The weapons are sort of there. And, 5-3 would probably be disappointing for them, to be honest, with Tampa Bay, but they're 3-5 on the season. Ja'Marr Chase, this was a stunner yesterday, apparently got hurt in last week's game. Going to miss 4 to 6 weeks with a hip injury, so we'll dive deeper into that. Certainly, the Chiefs have traded for former first-round pick Kadarius Toney, Kansas City off this week, and Luka with a 41-point triple-double leads the Mavs over the Nets in a really competitive game last night that went right down to the end. But let's real quick hit on Ja'Marr Chase and then the Toney trade. First with Chase, I mean, this is one of those things that when you look at it, Davis, like there's just no replacing this player. You kind of, sort of had to get lucky if you looked on your bench and you saw Tyler Boyd there. But I suppose the arrow, at least for the next month, pointing up on T. Higgins. And I guess the other problem with Chase, Davis, is that, I mean, when he comes back, your regular season in fantasy football is over, right? Like, I don't think he's coming back for anything but the playoffs at this point.
If he even comes back for that, I mean, there was that report circulating that the Bengals were basically like, Ja'Marr Chase is just, a top 99th percentile human being. And we think that he is going to recover faster from this injury than not only normal human beings, but just other football players. But, we've had wide receivers with these hip injuries in the past and basically takes them forever to come back. This is not even dissimilar from the hip injury that ended Tua's career at Alabama that took him, honestly, like 2 years to get fully right from. Ryan Fitzpatrick had a hip injury last year, led to him just retiring. Hip injuries for football players are really, really tricky. Arrow just has to be pointing down big time for the Bengals. They do not have a capable fourth wide receiver. They have a veteran Mike Thomas, not that Mike Thomas, the other Mike Thomas, and Stanley Morgan. I mean, these are creative players. They're probably going to be playing a lot more 12 personnel. They're probably going to be running the ball quite a bit. You just have to say this is absurdly bearish for the Bengals. And the Chiefs, I think, made an incredible gamble. I mean, everyone who watched them this year can see the wide receivers are letting them down. They don't have anyone who can beat man coverage. Sky Moore clearly not ready yet. They've been using him on these punt returns. He's been horrible on these punt returns. Honestly, I think one of the best outcomes of this trade is that Mecole Hardman is going to be able to return to punt coverage. And Sky already has through seven games, he already has three muffed punts. Just getting him off of that, I think, is going to be pretty big. But I'm very excited for Kadarius Toney in Kansas City.
I'm not surprised to hear that, to be honest with you. All right. Also, Russell Wilson, it was announced, will start in London this weekend. It was just announced about a half hour ago. That's a tweet from ESPN's Adam Schefter. So fire up Russell Wilson one more time at least this week in London against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Coming up next, it's time for us to take a look at last night's game in the NFL. The first time that we really have heard the words of Tom Brady being done, being cooked. You know, we thought we heard this a couple of years ago, and how did he respond? Went out and won a Super Bowl. Remember when he had the four fingers up? He didn't know the downs? Is this the end of the line? Time to start asking that question. We'll be back. Go ahead.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I know for me, looking at the game last night, and then, you know, obviously at halftime, Lamar Jackson's one of my quarterbacks in my fantasy leagues, and I was thinking, my goodness, this is going to be another game where I'm getting 10 points from Lamar Jackson, because after week one, Davis, I thought he was going to be the NFL MVP, and then, boy, the Ravens offense just has not looked fantastic, but in the end, he did come through, and I think in terms of his projection, he like basically hit it, but the reality of the story here is that he won the game. The Ravens, but from a fantasy perspective, I think he did just about what you needed him to do last night.
Yeah, 24-ish points, kind of depending on your scoring settings. Don't really think that you can complain too much about that. Although a huge chunk of his rushing yards did come on one play, and I was watching the highlights back this morning, and I was like, I don't know, I think Lamar scores on that play in 2019. Like, you know, once Lamar gets in the open field and hits you with one spin move, you sort of just feel like that's it. So honestly, I feel like the Buccaneers kind of got a little bit lucky that he didn't just totally pull away. I remember that rushing touchdown he had against the Bengals where he did the spin move and the two safeties ran into each other. I was kind of waiting for that to happen on the highlights. But yeah, he's the best. Like no one is more fun to watch for me play the quarterback position than Lamar. I know, you know, maybe some purists feel a little bit differently, but that guy is just, he's lightning back there. It's incredible to watch.
All right, let's go through the stats for Lamar and everyone else last night in the Thursday night game on Amazon Prime. Jackson last night, over 230 yards passing, also 43 yards rushing and two touchdowns. Kenyon Drake last night was more or less the best rusher for Baltimore. 62 rushing yards, also four receptions. One was a touchdown. Boy, I got to tell you, next year, I'm going to be interested in this guy. Devin Duvernay seems to really be growing as a wide receiver. Four receptions, 31 yards, 33 rushing yards as well. And then Isaiah Likely's breakout game was also last night. He had six receptions, 77 yards, and a fantastic touchdown for the Ravens. Now, obviously, that came at the expense of Mark Andrews, Davis. And naturally, for Andrews, who was questionable going into Thursday night's game, I think that's kind of the only negative coming out of this is that I don't know if the Ravens have a bye week, by the way. I'm not even sure coming up. But Andrews, I would think, is probably going to miss a game now. I mean, I don't know that they're going to bring him back again after this.
Well, I mean, to the benefit of you, if you are if you do have Mark Andrews and a fantasy league, they do have 10 days off before this next game. So that is always a little bit of a help when a guy gets banged up on a Thursday. It was one of those spots where he got ruled out pretty quickly. Like sometimes they'll leave you hanging with the questionable, but he basically went to the sideline, took his helmet off. The trainers looked at him. They sent him to the locker room and they ruled him out in a game that was pretty important for them to win. So and their schedule does set up that it would make sense for him to miss some time because they play at the New Orleans Saints on November 7th. Then they have a bye week, so they don't play again. Andrews could potentially, it's October 28th right now. He could only miss one game and then not have his next game until November 20th against the Carolina Panthers, in which, I don't know, the Ravens have got to be, I guess on the look-ahead line, they're favored by like 13.5 or something like that in that spot. And then the Gus Edwards, Kenyon Drake thing, I think it's pretty much as simple as Gus Edwards had not played in a game for 2 years. He was their lead running back on Sunday. His body just was not going to be quite ready enough to be the lead back here. So Kenyon Drake was. But in general, I mean, these Baltimore running backs are just going to be a gigantic headache, right? Because Edwards is going to play. Drake is going to play. Justice Hill was still in there getting carries. They use a fullback the most of any team in the NFL, or I guess other than the 49ers. So there are even some snaps where there are no running backs in there. Then you have to contend with Lamar Jackson running near the goal line. Now they're giving Devin Duvernay carries. It's like there might be 18 touches a game to go around between three running backs. And what then J.K. Dobbins comes back for the fantasy playoffs. And if you held him, you have to decide. Like I in the leagues where I had Dobbins, I just cut him because yeah. I was like, this is just a headache. I mean, I don't even – like J.K. Dobbins wasn't even a clear start before Gus Edwards came back. And now he's hurt, and Edwards is going to play well. Like, it's just, it feels like he's one of the easiest cuts. But Edwards is also going to be, I think, a pretty difficult start. I think we'll learn more about that situation when they play against the Saints next weekend.
It's also sort of interesting when you think about it, these ACL injuries or these key football injuries to running backs. Normally, it's like we wait a year and they come back strong. It's interesting that both Akers and Dobbins around the same time, neither a factor right now in the NFL. I would not have guessed that a year after, but may have to evaluate that for a guy like Breece Hall or someone else in the future. But you would think medicine's good enough to get these guys back, but it was sort of the opposite for those two guys. But we'll see. All right, now, I don't know, Davis. I don't think there's anything saving the Bucs. I really don't. Now, I understand the division is very poor, and they certainly could go 9-8 or 8-9, but I just haven't seen no evidence of that. Tom Brady last night threw for 325 passing yards and one touchdown. Leonard Fournette, just 24 yards on the ground. He did score, so he bailed you out, got you at 11, 12 fantasy points. Mike Evans was great. He had 6 for 123. Chris Godwin was good, 6 for 75. And honestly, Davis, if you looked at those numbers and didn't know the outcome of the game, you thought, okay, there's a 50-50 shot that the Bucs would win this game. But the problem is, Davis, this is every game for the Bucs. This is every game. One of the two receivers does well. Brady throws for about 270, 280, 300, and they lose. So what is going on here?
I mean, well, there are a couple different things going on here. The first one being, and they just, at this point, this is just who the Buccaneers are. They aren't going to self-scout. They aren't going to change. I've probably said this statistic on the show like four times at this point. They are one of the top five most run-heavy teams on first down, but they are 32 out of 32 in success rate on first down rushes, which means a huge chunk of the time, they're 2nd and 9, 2nd and 8, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 6. Like, look at what great teams do. Look at what the Bills do. Look at what the Eagles do. Look at what the Chiefs do. They're not running on first down. They're not putting themselves in 3rd and long. They are trying to gain yards uncreative. You could pretty much call out what they're going to do every single time. Godwin's going to run a crosser. Evans is either going to run a fly or a hitch. Fournette is going to chip the defensive end and then stand out in the flat and wait for his 3-yard reception. And then Cade Otton is going to run the opposite way of whatever Godwin is running. So if Godwin's on the inside, the tight end's running on the outside. If Godwin's on the outside, the tight end runs on the inside. It's like, it's got to be very easy to defend. The offensive line has not been very good. It's certainly not the way I would be calling plays. Obviously, you know, Todd Bowles and Byron Leftwich have forgotten more about football than I will ever know. But this is not how I would set up an offense if I had this personnel available to me. And honestly, I think the best thing for them at this point would be benching Leonard Fournette and playing Rashad White. Because I think if Rashad White was the starting running back, I don't think they would be tempted to do these first down runs. I think they would just be like, yeah, we got the greatest quarterback of all time, so maybe we should be throwing more on first down instead of running behind a terrible offensive line.
Yeah, and again, you know, and there's really no end in sight here. But as you mentioned, Davis, before, I mean, I look, I mean, Carolina, I suppose they, I mean, we're going to have a pick, by the way, later in the show. I'm not going to use this one. I mean, I suppose Carolina could win this week against Atlanta and be in first place at the end of the day. I know that's not what they want, probably, and it's not what anybody else wants, but I mean, here are those two teams on the doorstep on Monday, Davis, when we come back here. The Falcons or the Panthers are going to be in first. It's crazy.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I don't foresee. I think in the end, the Buccaneers will probably end up winning this division with like 9 wins. I mean, the Falcons, like just watching them, they're horrible. They just like, I mean, they get behind 7 points and it's like, they might as well be dead. I mean, they can cover in those spots, but they certainly can't win. And then, I mean, same thing is true for the Panthers. Like the Panthers, I honestly, it just feels like the vibes are off for the, and Mike Evans said that. After the loss against the Panthers, what he told the media was after he dropped that long touchdown, he said he just saw the light go off in everyone's eyes. And that honestly seems like the best way to describe this team.
Yeah, definitely does. All right, coming up next, Jim Sanders is in the house. It's time to look at the daily fantasy slate for the weekend. So stay on the grid with us. We'll get them priced out for you and help you win at the inside edge. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, Fantasy Sports Today, here on Sports Grid. Craig Mish, Davis Maddock. We're joined now by Jim Sanis of NumberFile and FanDuel, and we're going to go over everything for the upcoming weekend. Jim, great to have you back here on this Friday. Hope you had a really good week and ready to dive in this weekend.
Yeah, can't get much worse than dropping the Bucks money line last night. So nowhere to go but up from here. Feeling pretty good, I guess, if that's the omen for what's to come.
All right, well, we will see. We'll price it out, see if we can find some gems here. Let's, as always, start off with the quarterback position, and we'll lean on you and Davis for some good picks this week. We'll start off with Philly coming off the bye. They got Jalen Hurts back in action going up against Pittsburgh in the Battle of Pennsylvania. He is priced at 9,200. Kyler Murray of Arizona, a light dog on the road at Minnesota, and in that same game, Kirk Cousins is 7,800. Tua takes on the Lions defense. He is 7,700. Daniel Jones is traveling across the country to Seattle. Take on the Seahawks at 7,500. And then Jared Goff in that game against Miami, Jim, that has a total of 50.5, may I add, in this game. I believe it's one of the higher totals, Jim, on the board in the NFL. I must be missing something here. This is probably one of those where I would like easily just say it's got to be the under because Detroit can't score. I must be completely wrong. This game must be a barn burner this week because I don't get it. The Lions, like, haven't done anything on offense in weeks.
It's more about they've done nothing on defense, too. I think that's kind of the key driver here. And that's kind of why I like Tua Tagovailoa at $7,700, because we've seen upside out of him this year. They aren't a very efficient rushing team. Raheem Mostert popped back up on the injury report on Thursday. Could have been rep management, but a little bit concerning there. So I'd expect the Dolphins to put up some points here. They actually have the highest implied total of the entire week on the main slate, and I can't push back on that. So I do like Tua. Hurts has a very good floor. I question if he has a path to a 30-point ceiling because of the potential script in this game and because of how conservative they've been on offense. You know, not a super high ADOT of late. Could be because of injuries at tackle they've had. Both those guys now healthy, but I'm wary of the ceiling there. And I think that does allow you to get a little bit weird at quarterback. Sam Ehlinger has minimum salary this week for the Colts, $6,000 on FanDuel. Malik Willis, if he were to start for the Titans, would be in play as well. And then weather is kind of funky in Seattle. If we were to get lower winds, it's at 13 miles per hour right now. And if DK Metcalf were to miraculously play, I would check out Geno Smith. Just a lot of trepidation kind of across the board here. And what is probably the grossest quarterback slate we've had in a long time. And Kyler Murray as well. 82 is a guy I would turn to potentially.
Yeah, can't sell me on Geno without Metcalf. I mean, he could be playing a peewee team. I think we're going to see a big offensive cratering for the Seahawks this week. But I mean, the Detroit Lions are still ninth in the NFL in yards gained, fourth in the NFL in points scored. Amon-Ra St. Brown going to be healthy this week. DeAndre Swift going to be healthy this week. I think replacing Tom Kennedy with Amon-Ra St. Brown and Justin Jackson and Craig Reynolds with DeAndre Swift. I mean, DeAndre Swift is averaging 8.9 yards per touch this season. So I think that's pretty much what is going on with that total there. I would say, I mean, yeah, Hurts, Tua, Goff, those are your primary options. I personally am most looking forward to Malik Willis getting a start against the Houston Texans. He's played 145 professional snaps, including the preseason. He scrambled on 24 of those 145 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown. I think he's a much better version of the play that Sam Ehlinger is. Ehlinger, I think, probably is a better favorite to score a rushing touchdown, but Malik Willis could get 80 rushing yards in this spot pretty easily.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see. What if Malik Willis plays great this week? I know the Titans won last week, but could we FS late at 10,000, followed by Saquon Barkley at 9,500? But boy, doesn't that picture of Josh Jacobs look worth using this week? He is on fire, 9,000 this week for the Raiders against the Saints. Christian McCaffrey for the 49ers. Kenneth Walker for Seattle at 8,400. And my goodness, Jonathan Taylor, pretty low priced, as things have just not worked out real well for the Colts, Jim, as he is at 8,300.
Yeah, I think that our thoughts at running back should tie into our thoughts at wide receiver this week, because the value range at receiver is a death trap. Like, there is nothing good below 6,000, honestly below 69 on FanDuel for this week. So I kind of want to try to take advantage of the value at running back this week. Tony Pollard, just kind of like a lock button type play where you put him in almost every lineup that you use. Possibly Deontay Foreman, depending on the status of Chuba Hubbard. If Hubbard does not go, Foreman played well last year with the Titans, has played well so far this year with Carolina, and is facing a very bad defense in the Falcons. So I would like Foreman as well at 63 if we get him, or 64 if we get him without Chuba Hubbard. Raheem Mostert, if he winds up being okay, 68 is also a guy I would turn to. And then Pepper in the mid-range once again. Damian Pierce at 73 against Titans. And then Alvin Kamara at 78. I know Taysom Hill takes away some red zone usage, but in the games he has played, Kamara still has a 41% red zone share this year, which is a very good number. So touchdowns are going to come soon for Kamara. I think they could come this weekend, and I want to be there when they do come. So to me, take advantage of under-salary guys in Kamara, Pierce, potentially Mostert, and then obviously Pollard and Foreman too. Use those savings at wide receiver so you're not spending in the value range there.
Yeah, could really not agree more. I mean, to the running back position, I think there's like five guys I would play this week. It's Josh Jacobs, Tony Pollard, Kenneth Walker, maybe Christian McCaffrey if I was trying to get fancy or whatever, and then Ramondre Stevenson, and that's it. I just think that those guys are such, specifically Ramondre is like the pivot off of the mega chalk, because even like $9,000 Josh Jacobs is going to get pretty spun up in terms of the amount of rosters that he's on. So I'll get fancy at quarterback. I'll play some weird wide receivers, but I just have no problem eating a 30% on running back this week. Like, I think it's actually probably optimal.
All right, now let's move on and take a look at the wide receivers leading the way. Once again, is Cooper Kupp of the Rams, really the only offensive player on the Rams having a great year. He's at 9,300. Justin Jefferson, Minnesota, 9,000. Tyreek Hill is 8,700. Davante Adams, the Raiders, is 8,500. A.J. Brown against Pittsburgh this week for Philly, 8,200. And then a drop down to DeAndre Hopkins of Arizona, Jim, at 7,900. Naturally, a lot of good options here. Which way do we go?
Yeah, I want to, again, like I said, try to stay out of the value range here because it's not great. I think the prime guys I want to turn to, Chris Olave, $6,900 facing off with the Raiders, super rough defense, really good target shares for Olave. Even the games he's played with Thomas and Landry, he's had amazing shares, and now you get him without them. Obviously, it's scary to get super, super jazzed about Kamara and Olave tied to Andy Dalton, but I think that's the right play for this week. Amon Ross St. Brown sounds like he's good to go this week after not suffering a concussion this past week. $7,200 facing off with Miami. Pretty good spot. And again, like Davis said, I think this Detroit Lions offense could spring back to life now that they are healthier they were earlier on this year. And then the other guy I want to turn to above these two guys, DeAndre Hopkins, 79. That's way too low for the projected target shares he's going to get in this offense. They're using him in somewhat creative ways, which is weird for a Cliff Kingsbury offense. I think that we take advantage of that and use DeAndre Hopkins. And again, try to get to guys like Tyreek Hill at 87 if you can. But I think that using guys like Olave, like Amon Ross St. Brown, like DeAndre Hopkins, in order to stay out of the cellar at this position.
Yep, I'm with that. I think that Justin Jefferson presents a pretty appealing opportunity this week because there's this narrative floating around that Arizona has like this scheme that's amazing at limiting number one wide receivers. I mean, I think you can just look back to last week and at Chris Olave's performance to see why there are some flaws in that logic. But I mean, it's totally flowing through in the amount of rosters that he's projected to be on. I love Amon-Ra St. Brown. I specifically love Amon-Ra St. Brown. If there's any report about him, oh, we might limit him, we might only play him on passing downs or whatever, because that is going to crush his ownership. And I like 10% owned Amon-Ra St. Brown with the Lions trailing the entire game feels incredible. And then, you know, Waddle as the leverage on a very, very chalky Tyreek Hill, an absolutely fantastic play. And CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup as well. The Bears just stink. And I think that they're without Zeke, I just think the offense is going to be a little bit better. I also think they'll tilt a little bit more pass heavy without Elliott in there, which would benefit those two guys.
All right. And then finally, who is the magical tight end to play on the DFS slate this week? Let's go through it here. George Kittle coming off the good week last week is 6,900. Not a single tight end at seven. Wow. Taysom Hill is at 6,500. Hockenson, 6,300. Ertz, 6,000. And Higbee, 6,000, followed by Dallas Goedert, who is priced at 5,900, Jim. Got to try to find the diamond in the rough here.
Yeah, I do think Kittle's interesting if Debo Samuel sits, because that'll open up a lot of targets in that offense and kind of negate the Christian McCaffrey addition. So I do like Kittle, but my favorite guy this week by a pretty decent margin is Dallas Goedert. $5,900 has shown a lot of yardage upside this year, which is pretty hard to find a tight end. He's had 60 plus yards in 4 out of 6 games, 70 plus yards three separate times. It gets the exposure of the Eagles without breaking the bank, without using like a high leverage position. So I think that's my preferred route for getting exposure to that offense. And then whoever is the top tight end for the Raiders, I think will be a fun play. Whether it's Darren Waller, if he's healthy, or Foster Moreau, totally fine with either guy because of the potential shootout there. And a kind of a bring back option for my Kamara and Olave shares as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think for salary purposes, prefer Waller not to play. Although Moreau or Waller, I don't think either of them will end up getting that owned. A quick mention for my guy, Tanner Hudson, dead minimum salary preseason NFL DFS hero, going to be the long down and distance tight end for the Giants this week. I think he's really good. I'll be playing a sprinkle of him.
All right, there we go. Hey, Jim, thanks again for coming on the show. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk again next week.
Same to you guys. Appreciate it. Good luck to you as well.
All right, Jim Sanis joining us. Make sure you check him out over on FanDuel and also at NumberFire on Twitter at Jim Sanis. We'll take a quick timeout here on the show. We got fantasy or reality coming up next. Davis and I will remember to give our pick of the week out. We will do that this week. We forgot last week, and we got a good competition going here. So we'll run it back for you coming up next right here on Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. So stay on the grid. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Make sure you're following us on Twitter, on social media, at SportsGrid, at SportsGrid TV, for the latest news, notes, information, picks against the spread. We are closing out the month of October in style, folks. A huge weekend of football. Follow us there at SportsGrid and at SportsGrid TV. All right, time to make our pick of the week. Davis and I both forgot to do it last week here on the show. I think we probably both would have lost, but we didn't pick a pick, so we're not going to take an L there. On the season through 6 weeks, not seven, unfortunately. I have 5 wins against 1 loss. Davis has 4 wins against 2 losses. Let's see who Davis is picking this week against the spread. Davis, who do you got?
I have the New England Patriots. You can line shop around. I've seen this number at as low as -1.5, but our friends over at the FanDuel Sportsbook have them as 2.5-point favorites against the New York Jets. Honestly, the same thesis I would have used for my losing pick last week that we didn't end up giving. I was all over the Jacksonville Jaguars against the New York Giants. I think the Jets playing way above their skis. Zach Wilson, I mean, despite these wins, not playing well. I mean, you watch Zach Wilson highlights, and it's like he's running around with his like a chicken with his head cut off. I mean, not that this really matters for the line, but hard to count on a 60-yard Breece Hall touchdown coming out of nowhere when Breece Hall is not in the lineup. Bill Belichick, great coach. The running game for the Patriots. And I think the addition of Tyquan Thornton as well kind of gives them an extra added dimension. But this is just well-coached, very good Patriots team. I think it should be like 3.5 or 4 here. So I got the Patriots.
Yeah, coming off a loss too. I like that pick as well. I'm going to pick the Raiders this week. A favorite, which I rarely do, so this will be the second time in 7 weeks. 1.5 is the line over on FanDuel. They're at New Orleans. I've basically put my, I planted my flag with the Saints not being a good team. And then in doing research for some of the picks this week, I always do this, the Raiders, I did not realize, statistically speaking, should have their record flipped. Statistically speaking, the Raiders are a pretty good team in the NFL this season. Not only do I think the Raiders are going to win this week, I think they're going to go on a run. The Chargers are not good. The Broncos are not good. I think there's a chance the Raiders could sneak in like they did last year into the playoffs. And I think they're going to win this week. And it's probably a close game. But I think they go to New Orleans and win. They're not going to do it the way that we used to see the Raiders do it, which is Carr just chucking up 40 passes and throw for 400 yards or just running the ball with Jacobs. But it's working. And why shouldn't it work against the Saints too? So I will take the Raiders -1.5 on FanDuel. We'll grade us out next week right here on the show. All right, now it's time for some fantasy or reality. All right, Davis, let's jump in here because, you know, naturally esports have become super popular and NBA 2K, their league has banned 7 for gambling violations. And naturally, I think esports, to me, is something that is still a very big growing phenomenon. But at the same time, you know, you're kind of trying to figure out exactly who the players are because there's not a lot of track record there with online gaming unless you really do the research. Fantasy reality, Davis, we'll start here. You're interested in betting on esports.
Yeah, I mean, reality, I have wagered on esports. I've watched a couple esports competitions, mostly during like the absolute pinnacle height of the pandemic. I got pretty deep into League of Legends, DFS. I would, the world championships were then. And this is actually like fairly common. I mean, fairly common, like it's certainly more common than it would be in you know, like the NFL or soccer or whatever, where there are these huge, you know, multinational competitions and things like that. But they're like, I remember in my time of wagering on League of Legends back when there really was nothing else going on, there were multiple guys who were, you know, caught basically fixing the score so that, you know, these organized crime syndicates could wager on these games profitably because it was all that was going on. But yeah, reality, I've watched some esports. I think it is, it's absolutely going to continue to grow. Like, Craig, kids these days, I can't even believe I'm saying this, but it's very real. Kids these days love video games. They watch on Twitch. Like it's a very real thing. Like the idea that this stuff would go away or that it's a fad is totally not true.
Yeah, I think that I would agree with, but this is the easiest answer and the quickest answer that I'm going to give here on the show. No, I have no interest whatsoever in betting on esports. I think a real sports that are going on live is enough for me. I'm not downplaying the popularity of it, but I feel like research is required sometimes to make sports wagers, and I just don't have it in me to dive into this arena. So I am going to say fantasy, not interest in esports. All right, tonight it's game one of the World Series. Houston Astros and Philadelphia Phillies, just like we drew it up at the beginning of the season. Exactly, right? Well, maybe Houston, we thought, but Philadelphia is a huge surprise. Naturally, Houston's a favorite, pretty big favorite. It is tonight Justin Verlander in game one. It is Aaron Nola for the Philadelphia Phillies in game one as well. I believe Zach Wheeler's pitching game two. Verlander has struggled in the postseason before. I don't believe his record is that great. Houston is a pretty massive favorite to win the World Series, but the Phillies were dogs every step of the way to get to this point, Davis. Do they keep the magic going tonight in game one? Fantasy or reality? The Houston Astros win game one of the World Series with JV on the mound at home.
You know what? -163 has got to be one of the biggest historical lines for game one of a World Series. I mean, in recent memory, I can't really remember that many World Series mashups that were really lopsided where I don't even really know one person who is expecting the Phillies to win. I think a lot of people are rooting for the Philadelphia Phillies to win because it's a cool story. You know, they were the second wild card. Like they beat all these things that they had to overcome, the really cool Bryce Harper moment and all of that stuff. And everyone hates the Astros, right? I mean, cheaters and you know, like, I don't know. They just, Jordan Alvarez is very likable, but the rest of these guys are like totally whatever to me. But Craig, I am going to go on the opposite side. I'm going to say that actually the most brutal thing is going to happen, which is that the Phillies win game one. They steal the Verlander game, and then the city of Philadelphia gets its heart absolutely ripped out as the Astros rip off the next four. So I got fantasy here. I think the Phillies are going to take game one.
Yeah, I have reality here. So the thing is that I've learned in baseball. Now, I understand that Philadelphia played fantastic. I am rooting for the Phillies in this series. My guy Real Muto's on this team, so there's no question about it. But I got to keep it real. And this is the easiest way for me to go in all of sports. I don't look at trends, Davis, for 2022 and look back at 2017. I don't do that. I think it's nonsense. They're all different players on all different teams. Every sport, it's virtually the same. But Davis, the Astros have not lost a postseason game. You're asking me to go against that. I'm not going to do it. When they lose a game, if it is tonight, I am very willing to change my opinion for game two or three or five. But until they lose, literally lose one game since this all began, I can't do it. So I'm going to go reality. They find so many different ways to beat you. Like, you could see Philly going up like 2-1 or 3-1. And then somehow Astros score one, then another one, and then the game gets late. All of a sudden they're winning. So I just can't do it. But it will be interesting to see if Verlander pitches well, because this has not been his time to shine overall in the postseason. So we will see. All right, so let's cap it off here with a little glam rock here. We're going to talk about Motley Crue. One of the members of Motley Crue, Davis, has announced his retirement. Mick Mars has decided to hang it up. Motley Crue has said that they will honor his legacy. But of course, Davis, the money is there. So the show is going to go on. And actually, a lot of money was lost during COVID for, you know, no concerts for almost a year, yeah, year and a half. But let's ask the question, maybe more of a question for me than for you, but we'll start with you. You have attended a Motley Crue concert, fantasy or reality?
Yeah, fantasy. Have not attended a Motley Crue concert. I've seen Styx, which is like a predecessor for Motley Crue, right? Like, not like hair metal, but like, you know, the cool guitar solos and the, like, they you know, they had like a whole you know, mythology and aesthetic that, I mean, you know, none of those 80s hair metal bands would have happened without like the prog rock bands of the 70s, right? You know, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, like all of those guys were a big lead in to what eventually became the hair metal of the 1980s. I've seen the Eagles, another classic, you know, old fogey rock band. Love the Eagles. One of my favorite bands of stuff that came before my time walking on this earth. But just not a big Motley Crue guy. I don't know, for whatever reason. I like the 80s metal never really appealed to me that much. I guess maybe by the time I was cognizant enough, metal had gone in like a very different direction and had a very different subset of fans and just like a totally different vibe. So never really got into the 80s hair metal.
Yeah. You know, so I lived this, you know, like this was, you know, me living straight in the 80s in high school and junior high school. And obviously it was Motley Crue and Poison and Rat, and like I could keep Winger and I could just keep going and going and going. And Davis, they would tour. And Miami, you know, I lived in Miami at the time. And so obviously they were all coming through Miami once a year, something like that. But no, I have not. Now, I did have a Motley Crue, you know, tape of some kind, I'm sure, in the past, or even a record. But I also, like you, was not into it. It was very much the MTV days. And once every couple hours, their videos would pop on and, you know, you'd watch them and everybody sort of liked them. But as far as going to a concert, I never did. Like Def Leppard, I definitely saw in concert. I definitely recall going to one of those. I just saw Styx. I just saw Styx like 2 months ago. They were just here with our Speedwagon. So I definitely just saw them too with Loverboy and some others. But no, I have not attended a Motley Crue concert. And I will say, Davis, though, it was an interesting time for the 80s, because as I remember it sort of in junior high and high school, it's like if you were into that, that hairband stuff, you looked like that in high school right. and junior high. You always knew who the fans were of that. So that I think was the funny part of it.
Yeah, which is like, I mean, you know, that's how things were, you know, back in my day in high school is you'd very much get your aesthetic. What was really big in my time in high school were these like kind of pop punky style bands that I really never liked. You know, Panic at the Disco and Dashboard Confessional and these other bands never really did it for me. It was all kind of soft and whiny. Maybe have like more of an appreciation for it now as an adult, but really did not speak to me when I was in high school. I mean, I just have always listened to rap music, which is, you know, it's all got its pluses and its negatives, but that was always my thing growing up. So missed out on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, that was mine too in the golden era of hip hop. But yeah, never like hated the stuff, but really was not someone that was going to go to one of these concerts for sure. It wasn't my style. All right, my style coming up next is the Sports Grid at 60. We'll have that for you on deck. Then we'll turn it over to the Early Line with Kevin and Tony. I'm back with you at 2 o'clock Eastern on Newswire for a preview of the World Series and also a preview of the weekend in the NFL as Warren Sharp is going to be with us here on the show. If you want to stay on the grid for that. But we'll be right back as we wrap up our week of shows here on FST. So stay with us on the grid. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the Sports Grid 60. That's next here on Fantasy Sports Today. Break, break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Newswire here on, where it's Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. I'll be back with you for Newswire at 2 o'clock Eastern. You see where my head is. That's a good thing. It's already on our 2 o'clock show. All right, let's get Davis out of here for the weekend. It's time for the Sports Grid 60.
I'm pretty interested to see what happens with the Denver Broncos if they lose to the Jacksonville Jaguars in London. They will be last place in the division. They will move to 2-6 pretty much. They total must-win game for them to even be thinking about the playoffs at this point, and they're probably dead for the playoffs anyways. But they are, you know, amongst the worst teams in the NFL on offense. Jerry Jeudy, it purportedly is of huge trade interest. I mean, Do you bring Nathaniel Hackett back from London if you lose to the Jaguars? And I mean, there's not like the marriage between Russell Wilson and the organization. That's final. No one's taking him. He's yours. You guys got to figure it out. There will be no divorce there. But it feels like an inflection point for this experiment. And I don't think it's going to go well. I do think the Jaguars are going to win that game.
Yeah, could be. Should be a fun game this weekend. The London games, by the way, have been really good as well. All right, as we end the week of shows today, just a reminder, again, Newswire coming up at 2 o'clock Eastern. And a couple of the topics that we're definitely going to be talking about this weekend include the, of course, World Series, the Fall Classic. Is this a series where the Philadelphia Phillies are just too hot to stop? Because if the Phillies end up pulling this off, we literally have to just take this World Series every single year and just go with whoever the hottest team going in is wins, right? That's it. Astros have won every game in the postseason. But the Phillies have sort of done it in a way where they were underdogs throughout. I am compelled to watch it. Game one tonight, game two tomorrow, and we'll be back here on Monday. We probably will have an idea who's got a good shot to win this thing. So can't wait to do that. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Thanks again for joining us for our week of shows. Thanks, of course, to our friends at LTN. Today, our associate producer was Michael. Great job there. Our producer, Brett Levy, for my co-host, Davis Maddock. I'm Craig Nish. Enjoy your weekend. See you Monday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern here on Sports Grid.